So,
another question. I'm going to take the rest of the three. It's been asserted that Bill somehow interfered in the underwriting process, in the expansion of the underwriting process.
No, Bill did not. No, what Bill did was his responsibility. I also bandied that because I'm on the national board, and we're not supposed to do underwriting, or in other words, we're not supposed to have commercials. That's part of what we are. So, no. Okay, so what's the question exactly?
You're not supposed to do any underwriting, or you're supposed to only do underwriting, which are community partnerships?
The way that it would be perceived that Bill put the brakes on was he did put the brakes on to get permission from the PNB to proceed. Because the PNB was aware of what we were doing, and they were very upset. So there was, and I even talked to OBDK, and I said, listen, we're for the underwriting, but national is giving us a problem. And that's not in our mission or whatever. So that's how that played out.
I think everyone should know, who perhaps doesn't, perhaps in the audience, that
Rhonda
is actually on the Pacific National Board.
You need to ask a question. You can do that in your closing arguments.
Well, I thought it was important to understand where she was coming from.
You have another minute for yourself.
Anything else to ask Rhonda? Do you have any idea what they mean by Mr. Crozier derailed an estimated $1 million in revenue?
You know what? I have this to say to PK, Ted, and OBDK come out. You love this radio station. You got your handle on $1 million. Why don't you just keep proceeding with the work that you started? Why don't you finish?
I'm not on
car. So what's the question?
The question?
No, that's crazy. OBDK didn't raise any money. Greg Aldell didn't raise any money. His Spouse and Zara's thing was a mess and a fiasco. As a matter of fact, OBDK came on and he said, oh, well, we're not going to have a fund drive until such and such. And I kept going, OBDK, you can't wait to have a fund drive. You can't wait to have a fund drive. You heard him say right here that he didn't want to have one. So OBDK may have the idea, and I agree with him, that we have to have other ways of raising revenue, but not when you first come in and not when those checks aren't coming yet. So, yeah, I would love to know about this $1 million that Bill Crozier derailed. Tell OBDK and PK and Ted to bring it on.
I have no further questions.
I'd like to give my 3 minutes to the rebuttal from Dr. Clement.
That would have to be
okay, all right.
Am I done?
I have one more, Rhonda, from the group. Should OBDK be rehired? George, who is your next witness?
Bill Crozier.
I'm just a listener, but I'm reminded that this is a Pacific station. You treat people with respect and dignity. You can sneer at people, laughing at people, is not the mission of Pacifica. I'm appalled. I've never been in a meeting like this. I'm appalled at how ugly everybody's being to each other. Please, you can disagree with someone's behavior without
being
hateful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bill, on the issue of Chris, did you ask OBDK to fire him, and did he agree prior to or perhaps after he actually accepted the job?
In March, Dwayne and OBDK had some really long conversation. I remember one at least was like 3 hours long on Saturday in Dwayne's office, and we discussed some of the problems KPFP had. One of them was we couldn't afford open staff, and the other, the biggest problem was really intense problems with the membership office, that we were getting huge numbers of thank you gifts that weren't being sent out. We had pledges that weren't getting processed at all, or they were being processed wrong, we were getting deluged with complaints. And so I asked OBDK, OBDK at that time had just been basically observing, at the station since he was hired at the beginning of January by Lydia, and he didn't really have any assigned responsibility. So I wanted to take on some responsibilities, ask him, what he was willing to do. And he agreed to take on the the personnel problems we were talking about, which included the membership and also just the fact that we had too many people on the payroll, we couldn't afford them. And also he agreed to take on responsibility for organizing the next fund drive.
It's been alleged that you interfered with a successful underwriting campaign. What was the change that you wanted for that?
Okay, well, around I've been short of this so long. In fact, this was community partnership thing was started last year before OBDK even got involved. It was only kind of a small scale. I supported it then. I supported it several years ago when we talked about it on the LSB to do community partnerships, and we had some constraints on it. One was it'd be no, large corporations. We didn't want Walmart, ExxonMobil, or places like that. We didn't want to be PBS-style underwriting where you'd be collecting a huge amount of money from any one underwriter who then could put the screws on us if they didn't like the programming. And so OBDA asked me to get hired. Brian Sanchez to take that on. I'm big on the underwriting community person. I said, fine. I still support him. I've talked to him a couple of times. He's doing a good job, I think. But one of the things after OBDK got involved, I don't know if OBDK directly had anything to do with it, but they were looking at some really big corporations to do underwriting. And
such as?
HEB.
HEB was one of them. CVS. I'm not sure what else. There were some really big national corporations.
Bill, I have another question I want to ask.
I told you had to stop that. Some of you could not do that. So I did stop that.
Why did you fire OBDK? Why did you replace OBDK with Larry?
Well, I can't go into specific personnel stuff in public, obviously, but there were some really serious financial problems. The membership department was sort of out of control. That was directly impacting our revenue in a really big way. And I'd asked repeatedly for a plan on how to get that under control and get the membership, the fund drives working, and several other things that I had given to him in writing over a period of quite a few weeks, several times. I never got a plan to do any of that.
Did he ever respond and say he would give you a plan?
Yes, several times he said he would. I would ask him, what's the plan, and he would say, next week or something like that, and I'd say, okay, how about everybody calling on this day? And it's okay, and we still wouldn't be ready to put it off again. So that happened several times.
How serious were the financial problems at the time of the fire?
Well, they were really bad. I had talked to our CFO, who had also been watching this clearly, and we had financial projections, and there was one from Markeisha that basically showed we had less. This is after the June fund drive. We had less money in the bank than we needed to cover our expenses through August. And our CFO, Sam Agarwal, had also said that essentially we would not have enough money for payroll before the end of August because of this. So I mean, really, I have a fiduciary duty too to make sure that we can always make payroll. It's a legal responsibility, and if you get to the point where you can't make payroll, you have to shut down because you can't have people. You can't pay employees work for free against the law.
How responsive was OBDK to your requests, and in particular, how closely did he stay in contact with you? Did he respond readily to your emails and phone messages?
I don't want to get into personal stuff with him, but I'll just say I wasn't getting the plans that I kept asking for, and he would say, I'll get it later. He didn't repeat it, but I just
louder.
Never got it.
They want you to talk louder.
That's it.
There was a little money then. This was in April, end of April, or middle of April. And at that time, I had already told them that we had hired Greg in part-time. And it was moving pretty slow. But he hadn't been there too long at that time. And I wanted to go into help. He didn't know, he hadn't been there long enough to know people very much. Dwayne had been involved with the GM for 15 years or so. And I knew he would at least recognize the names of people who had donated a lot. So I thought it made a lot of sense to help each other to team up together. Obviously, it didn't work, but I certainly had good intentions and wanted both of them to help to raise money. It was all about getting the major donor campaign going, and I thought Dwayne could help provide a kickstart to that. And I told them it would only be for 3 months, and if it didn't work, then it wasn't going to get extended.
Do you remember saying that you made a mistake
when I've said it since then. Like I told people, they always do that. Well, I didn't say specifically Dwayne. I just said it didn't work with Greg and Dwayne. The idea of getting them introduced. And about the only thing substantial that we got was that Amy Goodman brunch the day after she came for a book tour, and it netted, I think, less than $5,000. And we were going to be having monthly events, and I don't think that ever happened. And of course, they were going to be bigger than that. What was to bring in $20,000 or $23,000?
At a finance meeting, when we talked about that money was running out in office, Marquisha said that wasn't true. So how much was it, if it wasn't true, that we didn't have enough to make payroll?
It's in front of everybody. I put it in earlier. There are 3 pages with the figures on.
I mean, you can't go negative at all. You can't start bouncing checks, basically. You're checking
your bank. Did not Marquisha say that wasn't going to happen?
You know, I didn't talk to her about that. I mean, that she worked for OBDK. I don't think OBDK thought it was going to happen. But I don't think, frankly, it was what she was going to say. I'm not saying he did anything deliberately wrong. I he's a really good person. I just think he wasn't watching the finances enough. And, you know, this, I'm trying to answer your question again. I remember back in around May or something, April or May, when I asked Ted, would he please talk to OBDK? Because the finances were clearly needed attention. You know, I think this was even before that June fund drive. And the fund drive before that had not done well. Membership was a problem. And Ted basically said, you know, we're too busy doing other stuff. Meaning, I guess, him and so, that just wasn't the interest there. It seemed like it was a, or I mean, there wasn't the concern that it was a big problem. Again, I'm not trying to make any baddest person version of anyone. It's just that it was being neglected. Let's put it that way.
Well, in June, which was the fundraiser,
yes.
Did you have a conversation with Dr. Fowle about putting it for later? Was the data point so bad that you couldn't have done it and had more time? You realized it was less than 2 weeks, right?
I didn't tell him exactly how to do it. I told him you have to look at the cash flow and get with Marquisha and make sure you have enough money to pay your bills and your taxes. That's basically all the stations do is how they determine when the next fund drive has to be is when are you going to run out of money. Now, normally you want to space the fund drives out and you don't want to put them in January, which is the worst time of the year and stuff like that. But you can't put them off at some arbitrary point because you run out of cash flow. You run out of money. And earlier, he was projecting that we wouldn't need to have a fund drive until August or something like that. But it was clear there wasn't enough money to make it even to July. So that's why the fund drive was moved up to June. I don't think I explicitly said you have to have it on this date, but I said you have to have it soon enough so that you can pay your bills.
I have a few questions here, and just for the sake of time, I'm going to limit our board questions to these, and then we'll have your rebuttal. Okay, I've tried to organize them for you, Bill, so they're kind of by theme. The first one is it fair to refuse to not answer a question because we're not in executive session and then you push for a public trial?
I don't think I refuse to answer your question. I don't know what your question is.
The next question is, is the IED required to follow all of the provisions of the bylaws?
Yeah. And I am.
The next question is, did you consult with the LSB before firing OBDK?
I tried to. I asked Ted about 2 months before, could you please get a MSRC meeting scheduled? And he said, I had to wait for Jaime to do it. He was the chair. I said, Jaime's too busy. It's clearly not happening. And I kept waiting. I never got a meeting scheduled.
Was the retire of Wayne Bradley legit?
Well, of course, as I said, I had a reason for doing that. I expected, and I told him explicitly, you know, I wanted to help. I wanted to get the fundraising for the major fund drive. So major donor campaign going, and I expected to help with it. And I told him if it wasn't successful, I wasn't going to continue. And I didn't. So that's what that was about.
Did you vote on the LSP to keep Dwayne as the GM in all the years that he was up for renewal?
Well, we didn't have votes very often. I'm not sure we ever had a vote on that until last year. And I mean, I objected to some procedural problems there. You know, I've been accused of being pregnant. I objected to some procedural problems. Well, frankly, putting KPFT and Pacific in legal jeopardy because of some of the way that the evaluation was being done. And I guess I can't talk about the details. I don't know.
You just did it again.
The follow-up.
You can say it again if you want, but I'm not going to put us in legal jeopardy anymore. But by
the follow-up question is, was that the voting in the best interest of KPFT and Pacifica, the voting to keep Dwayne as the GM?
Let me go back, okay, and I'm going to answer both questions. The committee was, it was pretty clear, some of the people had pre-decided they wanted him fired, and they were judging him really negatively on some things that they probably didn't even know anything about. And because the job description has all kinds of stuff dealing with everything from FCC compliance and transmitter operations and all kinds of other stuff like that. And they were just rating him negatively on almost everything, and sometimes very negatively. And I said, you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit. If you terminate this, if you feel there's reasons to terminate, just be honest and answer those questions correctly. And they persisted. And I felt it was wrong to give an evaluation if the process was really that bad.
Next question. Does the foundation prohibit paying for healthcare to contractors?
I don't know if it prohibits it, but yes. If you're talking about Dwayne, he wasn't a contractor. We have a policy, in fact, of paying benefits to people that are working half time or more. I mean, it's throughout the system. It's not just standard. It's more generous than almost every other organization I know, but most of the time you have to work 80% time or something like that, more than you already get done. But Pacific is half time or more.
Now, moving on to some OBDK questions.
Okay.
How did you expect OBDK to turn everything around in 3 months?
Well, first, you've been there since the beginning of January. It was part time. And I'm not necessarily expected to turn everything around. I didn't really. I mean, that's a fair question. But I did expect a plan. And I asked repeatedly for a plan. I never got a plan. And things were getting worse and not better. And, even a partial plan would have helped. And, the plan somebody hinted at earlier that was given to me after I had replaced him did not address most of the issues that I had sent him over a period of about 2 months. And it was mostly things like, we have these plans for generating additional revenue in the future, but they were just goals, basically. And it seemed to be the goals seemed to be written by staff for the purpose of keeping all the staff employed and avoiding the layoffs. And it was clear we didn't have the money to support everybody that we had.
Did you or did you not follow foundation procedures when you fired OBDK?
I did. And I talked to the national office, and we got a local HR attorney to make sure that we were doing everything for the book. And so, yes, I did. Very careful to protect Pacific's interests as well as the insurance to all the employees.
Now I have some Chris questions.
Okay.
When was Chris elevated from a podcaster to management?
I wouldn't call it management. He was membership coordinator. He didn't manage it. Well, I guess he did manage the parking people. I don't know. I'm not sure what it was. Probably late last year. I'm not sure.
Is Chris considered on-air talent?
Well, he did have an HD show. That's what you mean. I don't think it has anything to do with this. If he wasn't paid for that, that was not a true program.
Did you appoint Larry Winters according to the bylaws?
Yes, he was interim, and the bylaws really don't specify those detailed interim.
This one I'm struggling to reword so that it's fair.
Sure.
When was the earliest you discussed laying off full-time staff, including the new director, and discharging Dwayne Bradley and replacing him with a volunteer?
I object to you rephrasing my question. The question is very specific to a time frame, and you're ignoring it.
Is there a second to the appeal for the
second?
I'm going to read the whole thing out, and then you can vote whether to support my ruling or to go against it. The whole post-it says, isn't it true that laying off full-time staff, including the news director, and discharging Wayne Bradley and replacing him with a volunteer GM were discussed as early, and it gives a date?
It was, I believe, in March of 2015. Now, out of those specific people, when we started, they were in a local finance committee meeting. It was clear even then that we were having troubles making payroll. We were having to start having longer fund drives. We were able to keep up for a while. But I'm not sure if that answers your question. But it's been developing for some time. It just got a lot worse this year. Because of the decrease in revenues.
If Ted spoke with OBDK about finances, what was the next step?
If Ted spoke to OBDK about finances? Well, I had asked OBDK, this is why I started writing for a plan, how to make sure the fund drives work better, how you can deal with the problems with the membership office that were directly affecting the finances. I would have hoped that we'd have done some action, or at least not necessarily immediately, plans to deal with those.
So the follow-up questions are, was this the job of the MSRC, and did you have the right to go directly to the LSP?
Well, the MSRC is the Management Search and Review Committee, and if there's a problem with management performance, yes, that's the appropriate place to go. And, by that time, our LSP really has been so bogged down in minutia that we haven't gotten really anything. And one of the problems is that we tend to bring everything that's normally handled or should be handled by a committee to the LSB as a whole. And there's no way that we get through everything. And that's the point you have committees is to deal with stuff in more detail. And so, obviously the answer was a place to take this.
Okay, I'm
going to
ask George and PK how many minutes you need for rebuttal.
1 minute. I have only one question.
1 minute?
Yes.
So we'll at least get two.
Thank you for the questions.
So, Bill, is there any requirement?
I'm going to start with PK and then go to
Oh, that's fine.
That's the order I think I'm supposed
that's
to
fine.
I don't know.
Makes more sense.
Okay, PK.
When did the committee know you fired over the DK? Before or after?
After.
And the Wednesday before the Friday that you fired him, who all did you tell?
Wednesday before?
Before?
Some of the directors, not the whole PMP.
Does that speak to factionalism?
I talked to people that I felt I could trust. That way.
Well, that doesn't answer the question, yes or no?
Well, I don't think it's a matter of factual, it's who I can trust. And then I don't mind if I talk to people that other factions, different factions, about other things.
But this was checks and balances that have to do with your role did you speak to on the PM, I mean, on the LSD?
I'm not sure it matters, but I think Rhonda and Bob Gardner.
Mark.
And a couple of directors from, one or two from some of the other stations that I trusted and had experience with similar things. I don't know if this is relevant, but because there's some other stations that have had managerial changes, I'll put it that way, so I asked something about that.
Can you tell us about your love of the station and why you and Robert Mark sued?
That's a good question. You know, I do care very deeply about the idea of being Pacific now. And I wouldn't be doing all this if I did. I mean, I've been dedicated to KPMT ever since I've been involved with it. Like, you know, I've been a member since I moved to Houston in around 75. And I did drop my membership for a little while in the 90s, but I came back. And I've been involved in, as a volunteer, I've been volunteering since at least 15 years ago. And on the board, doing whatever I can to help the committee and community work. And even when I was on the LSP for 6 years, and I was off for 3 years, and I was 3 years, I was still very active volunteer. But what was your question? I'm sorry. I filed a lawsuit because there were people on the national board who were violating the bylaws of California Corporation Code. And the money, I mean, we were not suing for money. We sued to get them to follow the bylaws, to follow the law. Because what the board had done was to extend their own terms, again, in violation of California Corporation Code and in violation of the bylaws by not having delegate elections for 2 years in a row. And it's wrong. And frankly, I think if we had not and actually, I didn't file the lawsuit originally. I was tasked. It was already filed, and the attorney for the case asked if I would join in because I was currently a board member, and I think some of the other plans were not. And it was, don't we better to have a current board member? So I said, okay, for North Pacific, I will do that. And I filed a declaration that pointing out some false statements by one of the other members of the board because I was aware of what the situation really was. And if we had not had that lawsuit last year, I'm convinced we would not have had delegate elections last year. So it would be even another year for the terms that would have been extended, because there were all kinds of excuses why we couldn't have elections. And that's why.
What happened to the suit?
Wait, time is
up. It was put on hold.
George, you have to.
That's a good question.
Billy, is there anything in the bylaws that requires that you consult with the LSB before letting go an interim general manager?
No.
And has that, in fact, been the general practice throughout Pacifica for the last decade?
I don't think so. Maybe sometimes, but not all the time. There's been other cases where GMs or interim GMs have been replaced without the LSB being involved.
Are you aware of any other bylaw that you might have violated? And I certainly, you might have violated in replacing OBDK Kamau.
No, I don't know any bylaw violations that
I cannot understand. It is speak up.
Well, I'll repeat the question.
Okay.
Is there anything in the bylaws that says that you must consult with the LSB? I recognize, of course, that you tried through the MSRC, what wasn't successful in that. Is there anything in the bylaws? And since you did try, do you respect the sort of representation of public opinion that's in the LSB, at least in principle? And had you had more time, would you have tried to work with them?
Yes, and the main reason it became so urgent after the end of the fund drive, we were all shocked that the June fund drive came in at only 45% of its goal. And I had warned OBDK several times that, you know, if that fund drive didn't do well, we were facing layoffs right afterwards. I told him that before the drive because it was clear that the money was not there. And if we had more time, I would have used it. But And I have a fiduciary responsibility, too, to make sure that KPFD can keep going. And if for whatever reason we can't pay our staff and pay our rest of our bills, and we already weren't paying all the bills, in particular essential services and the loan on the transmitter that we got. And by the way, this, some people don't think about the Department of Essential Services. That's how we end up with $8 million in debt in this lawsuit in New York. These big stations haven't been paying essential services. Now, we haven't been, we're not nearly bet off some of the others, but I've been making it clear to the, ever since I became an AD, to all the GMs, they had to get, start paying essential services they weren't already. We had to get out of this debt. And, you know, we couldn't wait any longer. We're at the point where we have a failure of a fund drive and no plan whatsoever to do anything about it, to either reduce expenses or get revenue up, and no plan to get the membership office working. You know, I had to do something.
When you express that,
time's up.
Okay.
Point of personal privilege. Is there any way the room could be made cooler? If
there's a little box over there. I don't know what that stands for, but
no.
I don't know how. I have more questions here, and I realize I've allowed all the questions for everyone else, so it wouldn't really be fair for me to change it at this point for Bill. So I'm going to keep asking these
questions.
Hopefully, they run.
Okay.
Do you have less rights as the IED than the ED?
No. Well, I don't have a contract, but that's because, well, I could have had a contract if I wanted to, but that's when I asked me to do the job, I decided to do it as a volunteer, so I have no written contract.
How big a role did you play in the failed fund drive? Failed is in quotes.
Well, I had given OBDK a list of some things that needed to be done better after the previous fund drive, the one that was in March and early April, because there were a lot of things that weren't done, and I had asked him to, you know, well before the fund drive, we didn't even know what it was going to be, that, you know, you need to make sure you have people lined up to answer phones and wait for people to see what shifts to when you meet people. Then you need to have pitchforks so that the person on the air is just, you know, talking to them. You need somebody in the pledge room to do that. That we need to make sure we have fund drives sent out from the previous fund drives, because so we don't get numbers calling and say, where's my gift from the last drive? Things like that. And I didn't get directly too much involved in that June drive because, I was really busy with other stations, let's put it that way. And I think I only helped pitch for about 3 days. Usually I do a lot more. Or previously used to do a lot more.
This is three parts. Did you tell people of your decision on the Wednesday before the Friday of expired?
I don't remember exactly when. Just to be honest with you, it was clear before then we were moving in that direction. And I wanted to give it time and opportunity. That's why I asked them several times for a plan, and we just kept getting no response at all. And the Monday before, the week before, I had asked him, we didn't talk about the plan, and that was just shortly after the end of the fund drive. He said, how about the Saturday the next day, because it was a backyard party or something, and I said okay, and I called that morning, and he said, no, this might be the time next week, so I had to set about Monday, so we came Monday, get there Monday, DK's in his office, refuses to leave, I really wanted to talk to him about Chris, and the problems with the membership office, and the lack of a plan. She refused to leave, and I couldn't talk about the personnel issues in front of her. And he wouldn't answer her either. I asked him to. And he won't answer her.
So the next part of the question was, if you told people you were considering the decision before the Friday expired, and was it before the LSD meeting, and did you request their input that night?
Well, the conversation I had on Monday, which was pretty limited because I couldn't talk about specifics, I asked him, where's the plan? Let me get the plan. He said he would have it at the LSP meeting. So I respected that. He said, okay. I waited. Get the LSP meeting. It was near the end of the meeting. And it's when he gave the LSP report. And he said, I'm going to have a plan for you at the next month's LSP meeting. So by that time, there wasn't much left time left on the agenda. So anyway, we didn't have any other discussion about that.
Okay, this is a follow-up to the, do you have the same rights as the ED?
Uh-huh.
And the question is, why does the IGM have less rights than the GM related to firing?
Because there's, you know, this contract clearly says it's his will that he decides to be terminated at any time for any reason. And the bylaws have specific things about general managers and not for interim general managers. Interim means temporary, clearly. And we've had interims replaced with other interims before, sometimes, you know, multiple times throughout the station. So,
I had this question that I'm having trouble rewording, so I'm not going to read it. Or should I? I should read it and then, okay. I'm going to read it and I don't want you to answer it, and then if you appeal my decision, you can. The question is, if you love, the first one is it minutia when there is a serious personnel issue in existence for months and you ignore it for 2 months initially and then make a mockery of the process afterward? I can't reword that in a way that doesn't sound respectful. If you love Pacifica, why do you ignore serious personnel issues that can result in foundation liability? I'm not going to have them answer those unless there's something else.
I can answer if you want.
I would have to say, what are the issues that led to liability?
Right, that's what I'm saying. We don't have to discuss it.
Okay.
You agree with me. George, okay, do you need a rebuttal minute?
I do, actually.
How many?
Louder.
Oh, 1 minute to remember what my question is and another minute to ask it.
So 2 minutes?
2 minutes would be fine.
Okay, 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah, I have it. One minute would be fine.
Go ahead.
Caller's with
you. I'm sorry, what would you say?
No, it's out of order. George, please ask the question.
Okay. So, Bill, one of the issues that came up in terms of... One of the issues that came up in terms of somehow not following Obadike's contract, it's clear it's at will, which means that you could be fired at any time without consulting anybody.
Right.
But there was also an arbitration clause in there. And Obadike said you ignored his attempts to get you to honor the arbitration clause, or at least you didn't respond to his attempts. He said his lawyer sent you a letter. Did you ever get that letter?
I don't think I ever had any communication with his attorney. I was told he had an attorney, but no, I don't remember ever getting a letter.
If he wanted to pursue the arbitration now, could he do it? Thank you.
That's
it.
Wendy wants to talk. Wendy.
Oh, I'll call her as a witness.
Why did OBDK start off as part-time when he was moved when Bradley was leaving?
Okay, he started out part-time because my predecessor hired him, and that was I don't know what exactly he and he worked out, but you know, he was supposed to start for approximately half-time starting the first work day after January 1st. And at that time, he was to become full-time GM on March 1st, and Wayne Bradley would be step down. And I met with, I became IED on February 10th, and I talked with both of them, you know, briefly, late February. Obadike told me, he said he didn't know if his job was going to be continued or not. I told him I hope he would stay, and I hope he would continue, and I had great hopes for him, and I would support him. So we had a lot of important things we had to take care of. And then we met, Wayne and he and I met together, and I mentioned one long meeting in March. And he told me that, even before March, he said he wasn't ready to become full-time, and he wanted to wait. So he wanted to continue part-time. That was okay with Wayne, so he continued part-time. I think he wanted to stay until at least like middle or late March, so that was okay. And and then we magically talk about some personnel issues and financial issues, and I didn't push right then because he would be full-time for the city, and he wanted to keep waiting because he wasn't quite ready. I maybe wasn't sure if he wanted to leave his job at the issue quite at that time. And so, mutual agreement, he wanted to decide to wait until April 15th, and so he said, okay. And that's when he became working.
I have some. Why did you agree to reverse the firing of OBD Gate and then change it again?
You know, see, that's another thing that's just not correct. You know, I replaced him, gave his papers that morning on the July 14th, I believe it was. Had a long meeting with staff and mostly other people who came in and kind of dominated the meeting. Wanted to talk to staff. I left. It was a really long meeting, Q&A. I left. I got a call. And, you know, this was something we could work something out. I mentioned to her that, you know, I'd asked the plan, never got the details that it is about any personnel details. But, and she said if we could come up with a plan, that there would be response to us. Come up with a plan, would you be willing to reconsider this? And I said yes. I said that this plan had to be responsive to what I'd been writing to him about. And, you know, about 6 o'clock that evening, you know, I was emailed what was called the plan. But it wasn't responsive to hardly anything in the list of things that I had talked about. And I think that's why I assumed it was written by staff. Probably hadn't seen any of the emails between me and OBDK. So maybe they didn't know. But it was supposed to be a plan for what I had been asking for, and it wasn't anything like that. So all I had promised to do was reconsider it if I got a simple plan, and I didn't get a plan. So nothing changed. Travis is like yelling, he's trying to speak up so everybody's here.
How did the PMB respond to your actions regarding Dr. Kamau and
the other Dr. Good question. They passed real overwhelmingly a resolution at the very next meeting. I think I passed that out a couple months ago to you in July, supporting the action.
I'm reading this one, so I can't.
Okay. And that was an assumption that was written by staff. It appeared to me it was designed to justify keeping everybody on the payroll. They probably knew some of the other jobs were about to be let go.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't vote. Are we? I guess we're done, right? We've already done the battles.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill. I think we'll move to the next one.
Okay. And I'm sorry if I wasn't rolled. We had a 6-hour PMB meeting last night. I'm tired.
I have the 5 privileged motions that you can raise, so raise one. George, can you call your next witness?
I don't have any more witnesses.
Wendy.
So we're moving on to rebuttal witnesses. Prosecution, do you have a rebuttal witness?
At no time did Bill say, well, this plan has to come directly from OBJ's hands. The thing about great leadership, if you surround yourself with talented people and you have faith in their capabilities, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you expressing to those people exactly what your intentions are, and the people that you have surrounded yourself with should be able to formulate a plan or anything else that you ask them to do. And so that is what we did. So in my opinion, I don't understand how Bill is now saying that, well, I said it, but, you know, obviously he had no intentions of reconsidering at all, but basically simply said that because Rhonda was urging him to just leave the meeting, period, and didn't want him to make any type of commitment.
This plan, was this something that you made up just at that moment?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. From the moment that OBDK took over, there were processes that were put in place, seeds that were being planted to attempt to turn things around. No one expected anything to happen overnight. We understood that what was being planted was going to need time to grow, and we thought that that's what we had.
Did you see any of those possibilities come to fruition before Bill fired?
I did. I saw a complete 360 in terms of morale at the station, except for one employee. I saw people going about their day-to-day responsibilities with a new zest. I saw people thinking, well, there may be a future here. Myself, as the news director, was told, I recognize that you have a skill set that has not been utilized for the number of years that you've been here. I am willing to put you in a position that would be more beneficial to KPFT and to saving this station. And I think that other employees were told the same thing. And so we began to see this as an investment in the future of the station.
This is kind of a three-part question. You, of course, did lose your job, and in losing your job, you were given an agreement, and then you sought unemployment. You said, tell us what happened with both the firing and your expectations of what would happen next for you as an employee who lost their job.
Let me say this. If I had been told, we are eliminating your position, you are being laid off, There's nothing that I can do about that. But when an employee who is a part-time employee comes and pulls me out of a planning meeting and says to me, Tucker, you're wanted in this room over here, and I'm looking at her because we are in the middle of a planning meeting, and she says, you're wanted over here, you need to come now. I get up and I go with her, and I walk into a room where I am being told, this is Sandy, and Sandy is here as a witness. Okay? Well, here's your paper. You're being terminated. Excuse me? Effectively, immediately, you are being terminated. Tucker, this has nothing to do with me. This is all Bill. Look at the paper. He signed it. His name is on it. Why am I being terminated? I don't know. You need to ask Bill. So I go back to the meeting, and I said, and I sat down because the meeting was still happening. So I sat down to try to gather my composure, and I was asked, well, what happened? I said, well, I was just walked into a room and was terminated. And everybody's like, what do you mean you were terminated? I was just terminated. Well, who terminated you? Well, according to this letter, Bill terminated me. I was told, well, Bill does not have the authority to terminate staff. Okay, well, that's what this letter says. So after being escorted out by the police, all of this playing out in the media, quite embarrassing, I may add, I then said, okay, why am I being terminated? I think it was Rhonda who insisted that the police, you see her right there, she needs to go. Have her get her things and go. And so the police came to me and said, ma'am, did you receive a termination letter? Yes, I did. Okay, well, this lady is saying, since you received a termination letter, you need to leave the premises. I did as I was asked. I did not remove any of my things. I just gathered my purse. So I received this termination letter. I'm reading the termination letter. The termination letter said to me that in exchange for $2,100, if I don't file any complaints or grievances against the company and accept $2,100 and sign this agreement, that I would receive $2,100 for my years of service at KPFT. That was a huge slap in the face to me for several reasons. Once I was escorted out of the room, the next person up was Chris. Chris had been working at the station for maybe 12 months. Maybe. I'm not sure how long. Chris's letter said the exact same thing. If you agree to not file charges or complaints against the station, we will give you $2,000. Chris had been employed for 12 months. I've been with KPFT for 12 years. I found it to be quite insulting that I would be offered a severance package equal to an employee who had been there less than 2 years. I find it further insulting to know that a contract employee was offered a severance package. A contract employee was offered a severance package. I feel, though, that that is just a continuation of the treatment that has gone on at this station unchecked and unregulated. And everybody knew what was going on and how people were being treated, but no one spoke up and did anything about it. So I was told, you know, you need to go to the EEOC office to file a complaint. I went to the EEOC office. When they said to me, why were you terminated? I said, I have no idea why I was terminated. So the gentleman says to me, well, you need to file for unemployment because in order for you to get unemployment, they have to give a reason why they terminated you. So I laid out to him, I told him everything that happened, all the issues that I had with the station, the way that I had been treated. And immediately the gentleman stopped and filed a charge against KPFT. He explained to me that the station had 45 days to respond to mediate. He said, what would be your ideal outcome? I said, at this point, my ideal outcome would be to be offered a severance that is the value of the 12 years that I have spent at this station. I was highly offended that I was to receive a severance that was equal to not just an employee who had been there less than 2 years, but a contract worker. The EEOC guy said, when did companies start giving severance offers to contract workers? I said, the difference between this contract worker and myself no offense to you, Greg, is that Greg is a white man and I'm a black woman. I said, that's the only difference that I see. I said, but this is business as usual for what I have seen over the 12 years that I have been employed. He said to me, well, they have 45 days to make it right. If they come to you and offer you the severance that they're supposed to, then would you be okay? I said, yes. I said, but I can tell you right now, they won't do anything because they're arrogant. They won't. They will ignore this. He says, well, let's just sit back and see. So we sit back, 45 days come, no response from KPFT whatsoever. That didn't surprise me. Then I get a phone call from the unemployment office. The lady on the phone is asking me, well, ma'am, you say that you were terminated. Yes, because I was. Are you sure you were terminated? I said, ma'am, I was escorted out of the building by the police. I can assure you that I was terminated. Escorted out by the police. There's probably news footage of it. And I said, let me lower my voice because my husband is so disgusted by this whole situation that the radio station for peace, Radio for Peace, would treat its employee who has been employed for 12 years in this manner. She says, okay, well, I'm getting some conflicting information. We've reached out to the company, and we're just getting some conflicting information. I said, okay, what does that mean? She says, well, we can't approve unemployment until we work this out. 2 more weeks goes by. She calls me again. By now, I'm bragging to my friends because no one has ever heard of anybody receiving a call from the unemployment office. Here, I have received 2. I wanted to go out and play the lottery, okay? So I'm sitting on the phone with her, and she says, ma'am, we are really... She says, in the years that I have worked here, we've never seen anything like this. I said, well, what is going on? She says, we've been contacted by the company, and they are insisting that you were not terminated. I said, what do you mean they're insisting? She says, they are insisting that you were not terminated. I said, well, what did they say happened? She says, they said that you were laid off, that your position was eliminated. I said, well, you know, if that had happened, I mean, who can argue with that? I said, but I assure you, I was terminated. She says, ma'am, I said, listen, terminated, laid off, what's the difference? Do I not qualify for unemployment? She says, no, you still qualify, but we have been discussing it in the office because we've never seen anything like this. They want to go on record. They want us to go on record and say that you were laid off and not terminated. I said, well, you know what? I'm not telling anyone how to do their job. I said, but ma'am, I have a letter that clearly states that I was terminated. She says, well, do you have that letter available right now? I said, yes, I can send it to you. She says, no need. I just need you to tell me the name who signed the letter. I said, Bill Crozier. She says, okay. 2 more weeks go by. I get another call from unemployment. So finally, I say to her, ma'am, if it doesn't matter whether I was terminated or laid off, why is this process being held up? Because I have offered to send you this letter. I have no reason to lie on these people. I went in and I was terminated. She says, you know, this is just part of the process that we have to do. She says, I've spoken to you 2 times already. I apologize. I know this is unusual. She said, but I just need to dot my I's and cross my T's. The company is insisting that they go on record as having laid you off. I spoke with an attorney who said to me, well, the reason they want to go on record as having laid you off is because they realize the mistake that they made. And so they don't want you to sue them. They don't want to be liable. I said, oh, no, not Pacifica. They're not afraid of being sued. They're not afraid of being sued at all. I said, because this could have been over at the 45-day mark. Understand what I'm saying. I worked there for 12 years through all the chaos, through all the racism, the sexism, everything else that everyone in here knew was going on. 12 years. All they had to do was do right by me, and I would have walked away. Because who wants this misery? Who wants this misery? The 45-day mark was their point to say, oh, Tucker, what we should...